Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Yes, dear to be different. Just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming, medium wave 1548 in Satellite Islam. Alhamdulillah, we are truly, truly blessed. And as I was walking to the studio, those came to my mind that, you know, we looked in the brilliant sunshine, so many people walking out this morning, and we going towards midwinter, and yet, you know, when you come from other parts of the world and compare ourselves, we are definitely fortunate to have this brilliant sunshine, and really, really, truly blessed. But our heart goes out to those who are less fortunate. The nights, the temperatures do drip in the early morning. It definitely does drip, I beg your pardon. And so those who have to start out early in the morning, come back late at night, it is a huge challenge. And we're going to be chatting about lots of things this morning. We do have a wonderful guest, and that's Kerry Goodwin. And she's going to share some lovely, lovely information with us. Now, to those of you who may not heard about Kerry, she's comes from a family of horticulturalists, father, mother, a family who is, you know, really, really involved in the world of gardening, lots of ideas, lots of inspiration, and she's going to share some of that with us. Hi, good morning, Kerry.
Good morning, how are you?
Very well, thank you, and like I said, coming from a family that's so involved in the world of gardening, and you run two garden centres, and that's both out in towards the northern part of Johannesburg, is that correct?
Yes, we've got the one in Honeydew and then the other one in Craigle Park. And if I can, we're opening a new one, which is very exciting, with Keith Kirsten the Waterfall area.
In the Waterfall area. So would that be near the new Mall of Africa in that area or further down?
Actually, just in the Mall of Africa, just below it, in the dip opposite the Virgin Active and the Bounce there.
That's fantastic. So, and do you know when that would happen, Kerry?
It's towards the end of this month, so around about the 23rd, 24th of June.
Oh, so the end of June, not the end of May, no.
No, sorry, yeah, end of June.
No, that's fine. I must tell you, you know, days pass by, and, you know, when we talk about things, you know, we still sometimes think you're in one, and before you know the other, you're still in 1 month before you realize the end has come, and you're already going into a new month.
Yeah, absolutely. But we are very excited, because in that area, there's just still so much wildlife around, and so, I mean, when we're looking at the gardens and then the felt, and, you know, even though there's been lots of construction with the Mall of Africa and that sort of thing happening, there's still butterflies and little ladybirds, and, I mean, we saw a grass owl the other day. So I just think, you know, when you were talking about the sunshine and walking to work, I think it's just something that we could so appreciate, is our sunshine actually encourages wildlife to be in our garden all the time.
And, you know, something that, you know, I was out of the country when I came, you know, when you come back and you really, truly appreciate our sunshine, because, again, statistics show that out of the 365 days, we had at least 350 in our part of the world of South Africa, not all over South Africa. Cape Town is different.
Absolutely.
But when you talk about the high felt, you know, we talk about Johannesburg, it's about 350 days, which is remarkable if you think out of 365 days to have that amount of sunshine. And when we do get, you know, I think some of those days when it becomes dull and we're all just looking up and say, when's it going to clear up? I think we're so spoiled to look up and say, I'm sure it'll clear up by this afternoon. By tomorrow, we should have brilliant sunshine. We don't have that continuous period of darkness or greyness, and I think that is something that we are truly, truly grateful for.
Yes, and I think that's what makes us have such exceptional plants all year round. You know, we can garden summer, winter, spring, autumn, because the sun provides, you know, the nourishment for the food and the plants, and it's just, our garden should never be dull. Our garden should be full of color all the time.
You know, now that's another thing. I think, you know, I can't say, but just not very far back, we found that people, when it came to round about the end of March, and they said, well, we're going to give up and we'll get back into our gardens round about August. But I think those trends are changing. If you look around us and we find that there's a burst of color, we're spoiled for choices. Really, we are spoiled for choices to bring color into our garden, like you said, throughout the year. It's not just about a summer garden or a spring garden any longer. It's a, you know, I beg your pardon, it's throughout the year.
Absolutely. I think what's so exciting is, you know, we did have difficult times trying to garden in the summer. But then we had those beautiful rains in March and going into April. And so our gardens actually almost got a second wind. And even if it was our summer plants, they were looking good. I mean, I still know a lot of customers, their summer plants are still looking good. But then with this lovely cold or, you know, crisp air that we're having in the morning, the winter plants such as the pansies and the primulas and your sweet peas and even your aloes, they're all starting to look amazing now. So whether you like a garden which has color in the annuals or whether you have a garden which is more a rock succulent type of garden, and then you have these beautiful structural aloes. You know, I think if people had to look out into the garden that they had today, there would be something that's flowering and saying, look at me, I'm just waking you up to say hi and come and visit, you know, so we don't get stuck indoors.
You know, the other thing about the garden, I was looking at the lawns as well, you know, they're still brilliant, you know, you still have the intense green. And I think, like you said, we had the late rain, so the intense green is still there. It hasn't sort of faded or, you know, going towards the brown yet. And we truly, and, you know, Kerry, the other thing is we haven't had the frosts yet. So we really, really, for this time of the year, I think truly blessed we haven't had. I remember a couple of years ago when it came to 24th of May, we had a black frost. I'm not too sure, about 4 or 5 years. And remember,
yeah,
one morning we just woke up and lo and behold, everything was just dead. And I must say, we truly, truly, this year we've got it and we're going along. It's quite, you know, vibrant, the gardens. And not only the, you know, the five peas, like you said the last time, not the peas and primula, but even the arums are blooming, the colorful ones.
Yes, absolutely. I guess I was lucky enough to get a very black one in the flower, and then it's even got black leaves.
Wow.
So it sounds very strange, but it just looks gorgeous. I'm keeping it inside at the moment.
must be. You know, I'm sure it's a talking point, because everybody looks for that, you know, intense blue that becomes black. I haven't really seen a truly black one, so that must be really something stunning.
Yeah, I was actually very lucky when I saw it. I was like, this is for me.
I must say, you're really fortunate. I think, you know, if you do and you have a picture around, please do send it. I think it just must be such a stunning plant. Can you imagine? You said it's got black leaves. And then I was thinking, you know, just trying to think of what combination would you, you know, put it with. You leave it all by itself, or a couple of other colorful plants around it? I'm not sure. How would you enhance it?
I was actually going to say, when I'm going to plant it outside, I've got a very wet patch in my garden, and it seems to stay quite boggy all the time, so I know it will be in ideal conditions for the arum lily. Then I'm going to contrast it with the yellow, so that you really just have that intense black, you know, background, because the yellow ones, you can buy them like 4 in a packet when you plant them as bulbs, and then it would just shine through because of the beautiful yellow and black. So that's what I'm looking to do, and also because it's going to be in a semi-shade space, so it will be dappled light. So the shadows that will also play in the light. I just think it will be a nice contrast.
Yeah, sure. It's amazing. Now, let us now just look at what has to be done in the garden this time of the year. You know, people have still not really got into the garden and said, oh, fine, we're going to still get rid of all our summer annuals. It's still blooming. Our lawns are still doing good and so forth. What advice do we have and how do we take it from here?
Okay. So I think towards the end of this month or early next month, we probably would start getting the frost, and then your summer annuals would look terrible. But take your summer annuals and put them on the compost heap along with all your deciduous trees whose leaves are falling. So I think this time of the year is really like a tidy up and maintenance in your garden. And it's almost getting, and I'm saying in a long term, but getting ready for spring. So, you know, don't throw any leaves away. Put them in a container or put them in your compost heap. Those summer annuals that you are going to take out, put them in your compost heap as well. So that comes August, you've got this beautiful, lovely compost that you've made that you can replenish your garden and start for spring. And then if you've taken out your summer stuff, you would want to replace it with the winter stuff. And as you mentioned, the five peas are one of my favorites. I love the pansies and the primulas and the petunias. Oh, my goodness, the petunias at the moment are looking so beautiful. You know, if you have a very hot, dry place that you don't know where to put anything, they are the most gorgeous petunias that you can find in garden centers at the moment. And then the poppies, I mean, our poppies are already starting to flower, and it's quite early in the season, but the more you pick the poppies and put them in vases in your home, then the more you're going to have the flowers outside as well. So I think that's always a nice, you have the in and the out.
You know, besides the, you know, the primulas and the poppies and the pansies, and, you know, when I look at the pansies and I think, oh, well, they're always smiling at all of us and saying, hi, don't worry, you know, I'm okay. And I think that's something about the pansies. But then look at all these. There's, a vast array of other plants that you can plant. You know, I was amazed when I looked at some of the things and said, you know, we're not only, you know, sort of, bound, or we don't have to only plant those five. There's a lot of other ones that have come on the market. And that's what I'm talking about, that you're spoiled for choices.
Yeah, I was going to say, when I was walking around the nurseries the other day, one of my favorite ones, which is a very not common plant, but now it's in full flower and looking gorgeous. Is its common name is the common name is the fringe flower, and scientific or botanical name is the Laura petalum. And it's got these beautiful, almost maroon-colored leaves, and then this bright pink flower. And at the moment, it's just covered in bright pink flowers. You also get a white one with it, which is a lot more rare. But it's so nice to have, and it's quite a big shrub that you could put into a pot or into your garden. And this burst of color of something that you normally would just keep for a foliage plant. So I think we have this lovely contrast of the foliage, which is all changing now. I mean, the ginkgo biloba trees, which have got that rich, rich yellow leaves that, you know, slowly falling off as because it's deciduous. But you've got these colors, and the other ones that I'm just thinking that are looking gorgeous, you know, all the plectranthus are still beautiful in flower because we haven't had cold yet. So for an indigenous semi-shade garden, those are looking great.
You know, and then you... Carry on, please do carry on.
Oh, sorry, I get so excited.
No, please. I want you to share the excitement, and we want our listeners to call in and share what they want. But please do carry on, Carrie. I do appreciate it.
You know, and then the abelias, which are really, you know, you have all the different ones, the yellow foliage abelia, which is the Francis Mason, and then your grandiflora with that rich emerald green flower, leaf, sorry, not flower. I think, you know, in the wintertime, if you're going to have your annuals, which are providing color, you need to have those evergreen hardy shrubs which form the background of your garden or the background to which the annuals can display their color. And so those are really looking nice. You know, the viburnums, I saw one of the viburnums has got its little buds already, so it's completely deciduous, lost all its leaves. And then it's got these tiny, tiny little white flowers coming to, you know, shining through, and I'm thinking, I think you're a little bit early. But anyhow, you know. So, and then what's also looking lovely is all our fruit trees. I mean, our citrus trees. So, you know, the lemons are coming in. Your oranges are slowly, very slowly turning to have the orange. I was driving around in one of the farm areas. And I mean, their orange trees are just covered in oranges already. I don't think that's quite the case in some of our gardens. But so a lot of our citrus is also bringing this beautiful color and then obviously nutrition into our gardens and homes.
Yeah, you know, and I'm looking at the mine specifically was the limes. I saw these tiny limes already on the trees. The first time it's, you know, sort of fruiting, and I was so excited. I said, well, even if I get four limes, I'm lucky this year, but it's the beginning of something that's going to happen on that lime tree.
Yes. So to get more limes or to get more citrus on your tree, it would maybe about 3-4 weeks ago, would have been a good idea to feed with 315. And then also in the springtime to feed with a 315 again. It just boosts the potassium levels of the, you know, that the plant need to produce very tasty, very wholesome fruit. And the other thing to do with the citrus, which I think people forget, and I don't think people realize how plants, I'm going to put it in inverted commas if you could see me with my fingers, how plants think. But fruit, if your fruit is coming out and it's a bit like dry in the inside, it means that it hasn't had not enough water. It hasn't had consistent watering. So you've kind of watered it 1 week and then left it for 10 days and then, oh, I thought maybe I must give it some more water. And then 3 days later, you're like, oh, I forgot to water my lemon tree. Let me water it again. And if you want really juicy, tasty fruit, you almost need to water your lemon tree every Monday. And you give it the same amount of water every Monday. And then that makes it produce beautiful, tasty fruit because it's not ever thinking or going into a stress situation where it thinks, oh, you know, what am I going to do or when am I going to get my water or vice versa. Please, just stop giving me too much water. So that was one thing I learned from one of the citrus growers, and it really is so true. If you can be consistent in your watering, not constant, you'll see your plant will just produce the most beautiful, tasty lemons or oranges or nachis or tangelos. I mean, the variety of citrus that we have at the moment is also quite incredible.
So it's 315 and consistent watering that would be the secret?
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you. And I've got a question coming through, you know, something that says that I've got those, what do you call those, baby oranges that hasn't been fruiting at all. What do you think has been the problem?
So those would be those maybe little calamondins.
It must be calamondins, I'm sure.
Yes.
It would be. What would be the reason it hasn't been fruiting? It's in the garden for the last 5 years.
Oh, my goodness. I think then it might be in a not-so-happy place within your garden, so maybe it's getting a little bit too much shade. You know, the citrus does like a full sun environment, so preferably 5 hours of sun, and it's possible at least three of those must be the afternoon sun, where it's really nice and warm, and that will also encourage the flowering, and then also to feed it. So if you could increase the potassium level somehow with a 315, that would also help it a lot. And if it's in a pot, we might, after 5 years, it would have, you know, used up all those nutrients, so all the more reason to feed, but it might be a bit root bound.
Okay. Thank you very much for that.
That is what I would try.
Okay, Curry, you know, we're talking about lots of things, and I've got some things it talks about, you know, different, you know, the daisies. Now, I know it's a bit early when you talk about the macaroon daisies, but someone sent in, says, you know, that it's already blooming. Is it? Could it happen at this time of the year? We're talking about the macaroon daisies.
When it's supposed to be,
you know, it's supposed to be early spring and not late autumn and early winter. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it could be, and, you know, we use the word quite often and frequently, is the effects of global warming. So our plants aren't quite sure. And because we haven't had really freezing cold temperatures, the seed has actually probably germinated much faster or earlier than expected. So maybe that person who's phoned in or has, you know, planted the seed. And because we normally have a cold winter, it takes a slow time for the plants to germinate. But now because we've had beautiful sunny days, you know, our temperatures haven't really dropped much below 5 yet, and we've still had the rain, the daisies are like, oh, this is ideal conditions for me to grow. And they've already sprouted and come through. And hopefully they will keep on flowering, because when the cold does come in, then it will almost slow their growth a little bit. But they should just carry on flowering now. Maybe they'll finish a little bit earlier, and you might need to just sow a few more in about 6 weeks' time, so you have that continuous flowering all the way into spring. But I just think that, you know, the conditions for growing, they're just so happy, and they're just like, oh, please let me just grow and show my beautiful color. So
tell me something, is it still time for us to sow the seeds of the macaroon daisies and any of the other, you know, early spring, you know, flowering plants? Is it still time? And with the bulbs, how far are we, or can we still do some of those things?
Okay, so the bulbs you could definitely still sow. I know now is a perfect time to sow the lilium bulbs. So if you wanted spring lilies, and on the Life of the Garden webpage, they had such a lovely idea that when you sow your bulb, put a little like bamboo stick next to it, because often they grow so tall, and just when the flowers are looking beautiful, they fall over. So if you've got the stick there next to where you've planted the bulb, you can just tie it on, and you're going to have this beautiful flowering lily in the spring. So I thought that was a nice idea. You know, if you wanted tulips, I think you can buy them from the Hideco website, which would be also wonderful. You can't really find them in too many garden centers, but it would also be the right time to plant the tulips. Then a lot of your other ones, I think you've probably got about another 2-3 weeks that you would be able to plant them, and they would come through with great success in the spring. I know the ranunculus already, the plants are looking quite good if you have planted them already. I saw some in a customer's garden. I was like, my goodness, you're very diligent to have planted them. You know, they planted them in mid-April, and they've got beautiful bushy plants already.
What about carry on.
I was going to say, and then when we get back to the seeds, you know, I think it would be a little bit maybe too late to plant your sweet peas. But the macaroon daisies, a lot of your winter flowering plants or spring flowering plants, it would still be okay because we haven't got that intense cold yet. So they would still be able to, you know, start germinating before the cold comes, and that's what you have to be aware of.
What about narcissus and daffodils?
The daffodils would be great, and then, yeah, narcissus would be also, you could still plant them quite happily. And, oh, yeah, could you imagine in the spring all the daffodils coming through? We had a customer who planted the daffodils in his grass, because then it gave a true English country feel. You know, in England, the daffodils grow wild, and the narcissus, they grow wild. And so he decided he was going to, planted his daffodils in the grass to give that wild English country kind of feel. I thought that's wonderful to do.
Yeah, my challenge around both of these is that you've got to be very careful. I remember many, many seasons ago, we bought a whole lot of daffodil bulbs, and I think we buried them. We didn't plant them.
So when you plant your bulbs, you almost just want to go the depth of the bulb by itself. So if the bulb is say, the size of your fist, which obviously it wouldn't be, it would be much smaller. But then you take the size of your fist times two, and you put your bulb that deep, and then you cover it up. So then it's not, and obviously loosen the soil around it, so that it's easy for the bulb to grow through. If you plant it too much deeper, it also becomes a problem. The other thing with bulbs is that they, again, almost like the lemon trees, they like 40 minutes of water every 4 days.
So that's 40 minutes of water every day, that's the bulbs?
Every 4 days.
Okay, four times four.
So you would, yeah, so you would water on the Monday and then on the Thursday and then again on the Sunday, and you carry on a cycle like that. You know, just at least until they have germinated and are coming through, then you could probably make it a little bit less. But they do like a lot of water to get the nutrients from the bulb itself into the plant to encourage it to grow.
Just before we go, for new hydroponics, are narcissus still a good time to do hydroponics display?
Yes, I think the customers might have difficulty finding narcissus. I know we battled to buy a lot this year, so it is one of my favorites to be able to put and have all those beautiful paper whites in a glass bowl. But I don't think the crop that managed to produce enough this year. But if you have found it, fantastic and an ideal way to do hydroponics, yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Kerry. We're going to go for a news break. When we come back, we'll continue. You take care.
Okay, thanks. Thank you very much.
Assalamualaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. Yes, Dear to Be Different. My name is Ismail Briyawa. Just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming, medium wave 1548 in Satellite Islam. And we've got a wonderful, wonderful guest, and that's Kerry Goodwin. And she's sharing some wonderful information. And if you'd like to join our conversation, the number this morning is 854-1548. You can join our conversation 854-1548. Kerry would definitely take on any queries, any questions that you have. Related to garden. We're talking about gardening in winter. It's a brilliant idea. In the past, many of us did not want to garden out in winter. We thought it was too cold. But we've really, really been spoiled for choices. And Kerry has given us some wonderful ideas about citrus and some of the watch points for citrus. And that was consistent watering, use 315. And we spoke about bulbs. And we're going to now look at other plants, and as well as vegetables and herbs that can be planted at this particular time in the garden. Hi, good morning, Kerry.
Good morning. How are you again?
Thank you very much. You know, you've given us, and I was just thinking about what you said about consistent watering, and I think this is something that we struggle with, because, many of us sometimes get into the garden and say, well, it looks a bit dry today, maybe I should give some water. And tomorrow you say, well, doesn't look too bad yet, and I think that consistency then loses momentum. And what you said is, that for citrus to do well, if you've got a schedule and you put it up somewhere in your garden, somewhere that reminds you, well, Monday comes and what happens, hail, snow, whatever it is, you've got to get out there and make sure that you give it enough water and it's consistent, it's deep watering. I think that would make it, such a difference. And just giving the thought, and even with the, feeding the 315 and so forth, what happens is that some of us tend to, say, we do it very impulsively. Well, I think I should give it a little bit today because I think, not knowing that you have a calendar and you should be following that. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was going to say, plants are very resilient. So I can see even like my spinach and my primulas at home, we still have water restrictions, so I can only water them once a week at the moment, and if I water extra, it's because I recycle in my bath water or something like that. But they're still growing, but they're not thriving, and that's the same with the feeding. You know, the plants will grow, and they will eventually produce beautiful spinach leaves that I can make a stir fry with, or my primulas will flower, prolifically. If I was a little bit more consistent in my watering, and as you said, giving them the food, I should be giving them seedling food once a month, just to boost them, or maybe a little bit of Nitrosol or Multipede, every 2 weeks. And that just helps them to look better in your garden. Otherwise, they're going to be there and they'll perform, but they're not really going to jump out at you and say, look, I am incredible. And that's where the consistency comes in with the gardening, or having a calendar that kind of reminds you, oh, I'm supposed to feed my plant. If you're using an organic fertilizer, then like the 315 or the even 232, there's an organic one, you should only have to feed once every 4 months. So it's a very long-term process, and the plant will absorb the food as it needs it. but it still does need that food. And I think sometimes customers get so disappointed if they look at the plants that they buy in the garden centers and they look beautiful, and then they go and put them in their garden and they leave them for a month and they do water them, and then they start losing a little bit of condition. And then they forget that actually to keep that plant looking beautiful all the time, it does need some food or a little bit of something extra, some compost or something to boost it.
Thank you very much for that. I think we've got a call online. Let's take that and we continue. Mm-hmm. Assalamu alaikum.
Good morning. I'll ask your advice. I know someone that has a kumquat tree that's over 20 years old, but now it's bearing lemons.
Sorry?
Is that because it's grafted?
It could be. Sure, I was going to say, to get a kumquat tree that's that old is actually wonderful, and they're quite difficult to get at the moment. So
yes,
now that it's changed
difficult.
Over to lemons, it's actually very bad, my goodness.
And the problem is, from the Cape, they don't want to actually send it out to the Johannesburg area because of what they're calling the black dot.
Yes, sickness. You can't transfer citrus across borders.
Yes.
But you should be able to still get a kumquat. I was going to say, the reason that it has happened is because they do graft a lot of the citrus onto strong lemon rootstock.
Okay.
So that's probably the reason that it happened. But being so old, I'm very, very surprised that it has happened. I was going to say, I haven't actually seen a lot of kumquat trees around this year so far. But I could definitely keep our minds open, and maybe you could just... you know, send me your email address, and when I could find one, if you did want to plant another one.
Yes, I definitely want. Actually, I've been grafting myself, or try experimenting on grafting as well.
Yeah, because you won't be able to get it back to the kumquat once the lemon part comes through.
Okay.
You know, that's obviously the strongest part of the plant that has now reproduced the lemons. So you would have to purchase another kumquat tree to be able to have kumquat.
Okay, most definitely we'll do that. Thank you.
Yeah,
you
I'm
don't have
that
more in your nursery kumquats, do you?
No, I haven't been able to buy any yet. That's what I'm trying to think.
Because I did try the Cape, and they definitely told me, sorry, no cross transfers from.
Yeah, but I was going to say, you're based up here in Johannesburg,
yes,
though, aren't
in
you?
In Indonesia. I'm based in Indonesia, but this tree is in Benoni that I'm talking of. That changed over.
Oh, okay. But we would be able to. Let me have a look around, and then maybe if you just email one of our garden centers, cs@colorfulgroup.co.za.
Yes.
And then I'll have your email address, and as soon as I find one, I'll let you know.
Thank you for your time. Go well.
Okay, pleasure. Yeah. Anytime. Thank you, please.
Thank you very much. And, Carrie, I was quite surprised to hear, that a tree from a kumquat, is now bearing lemons. And you say it does happen because it may have been grafted onto a lemon tree. Is that correct?
Yes. It's very strange that a tree so old would change over. So, I am quite flabbergasted, but I know it does happen, and I know it actually happens with the roses sometimes, especially now when we start thinking of pruning our roses coming into July. You know, you normally prune your roses around about the 16th of July. Sometimes we prune too aggressively, and then that also results in our roses changing from something that we had maybe as an iceberg or a burgundy iceberg or a just joey, and then the next thing we have these almost like water shoots coming through. And then that's actually more the graft than the actual rose that we originally had.
So, would we call it, sort of considered a freak, It's not something that happened often,
No. I was going to say, I've never heard it happening on such an old tree. I could understand if it maybe was a bit younger and more like a standard, because then your graft is very visible. When it's such an old tree, it sounds... very suspicious, but it could also just be in terms of cross-pollination. Maybe there's other lemon trees within the area. So when it was pollinated by the bees or something like that, you had the lemons, the bees collected pollen from a lemon tree and then pollinated it, and now it's just made the lemon part of it much stronger. It just seems it's definitely a freak.
Yes. The other question coming through, can you sort of, overfeed plants, with any of these feeds? Would they destroy them? For example, 313, whilst you say the regimen is maybe once every 4 months and you do it every 2 or 3 weeks, would it kill the plant? What would happen to that plant?
It won't kill the plant. Most of the fertilizers, you're given a handful per square meter, and they're water soluble. So if the only problem with feeding, and if it's not an organic one, if you're using more a chemical one like a 713 or an 815, is that you might put it too close to the stem and it would burn the plant. But that very rarely happens, because often when you purchase those, you would be told, you know, please water it well, water it in first. And so those aren't likely to happen. And then because a lot of the fertilizers are water soluble, or they get absorbed into the soil as they get broken down, you should very seldom, I haven't ever heard of a plant being overfed. It's just maybe burnt a plant because it hasn't been watered once you've applied it.
Now, it's this time of the year we've had all the brassicas coming in. They're doing gorgeously well.
Yes.
And, you know, the kales and the cauliflowers and cabbages and so forth. And we also have the Chinese plants, you know, they've now come in, and we have quite a number. We've been spoiled, you know, it's the mustard and the bok choy and the pho and the pak choy and all of that. And they're all doing just stunning. Tell us something about the brassicas and that. And also that we have two other, you know, vegetables. That's the, well, easy peasy peas. That's what they call it.
Yeah,
I don't know how easy peas it is. And of course, the beans, you know. So lots of these. Tell us something about all of them.
Okay. So I was going to say wintertime is definitely a time for the leafy green veggies when they're actually thriving. And I think, I mean, I had a customer the other day who'd never tasted my favorite one, which you mentioned before, is the red mustard.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to him, you know, you should try this, because he was just looking for ordinary spinach. And I said, but there's so many other beautiful vegetables that you can add into your food now to make it tasty. And so he tried that, and he did quite like it. So as you said, you have all your brassicas. And I think what's amazing is, this gentleman, he was saying, you know, how he's going to plant his spinach, and right next to it was the cabbage. And then he said, oh, I'd love a cabbage, but I don't have space for it. But, you know, it doesn't need huge amounts of space, so he might not be able to plant all six that he buys in the seedling tray. He could maybe only plant two. But if you have a space that's about 30, maybe 40 centimeters, you know, a nice pot to put it in, your cabbage could go into a pot. It doesn't have to go into the garden itself. And it's the same with your broccoli. You know, now you get the little tender sprouts broccoli, which you're not eating almost the head, you're eating the whole stems of the broccoli, and it's in a lot of your food that you buy today. And even if you go and buy it from Woolies, they tend to sell more of the tender parts, the tender stems, rather than the heads. And so they're trying to create the veggies that would be able to grow in the smaller spaces that some of us are having to confine our gardens to now. So there are those options. And I don't think you must ever think of space as a problem. If you plant it in very good composted soil or good potting soil, you know, the plant would still be able to grow and form a beautiful head of broccoli or the head of the cauliflower quite easily within a 30 to 40 centimeter space.
I don't think
you must reduce yourself or limit yourself to what vegetables you can have. And if there's six in a tray, what a nice opportunity to say to a neighbor, you know, I bought six, but I only need, or I can only fit in two. Would you like some of my cabbage plants?
Yes, you know, that's something about gardening, is to be able to share. And I think that comes up with so many gardeners, you know, be able to come up and say, look, fine, here's some of my harvest, or here's a plant, or whatever it is. And I think, you know, there's an old mistake, but if you take something from someone else's garden without looking, maybe it'll grow better. I don't know how true that is. I've always heard them say that. But it's about, you know, sharing, I think.
Yes, no, absolutely. And because I've got some of my favorite plants from friends who've had them in their garden. And often some of the older plants, I'm not talking on veggies though, but some of the older plants you actually can't find in garden centers anymore. So you do want to get them from your grandmother's garden, or, you know, your grandmother's friend's garden, who you've seen something beautiful. And then you want to try and grow it by cutting.
You know, I've got a plant, and, you know, I don't really know the name. I've tried. It's a leaf, and you use it, you know, in certain forms of cooking. I'm not even sure, but it grows as a creeper. And, you know, people come in and say, can we have a cutting of that? And it's something that the old people used to use, you know, when they're making certain types of a food and so forth. But you can't get in a garden center. I don't know where it comes from. I don't know the name. All I know, it's not poisonous. I know it's edible. That's all I can tell you. It looks like a green leaf. That's all I know about that.
Oh, yum.
The next time in the area, I definitely have to bring you some more of that, because I don't really know what is it. The other thing is I met someone the other day and said, you know, I don't have any space and I'd love to garden, but I'm living in a small space. And I said, but you can still garden, even if you're using the potting bags. Is that correct?
Yes. So, I mean, and you can do it, you don't even have to buy special potting bags. You could just buy a bag of potting soil. So your bag of potting soil is probably about 40 to 50 centimeters each. And you would cut small holes into that bag, because within the bag of potting soil is nutrients for the plants or fertilizers for the plants for about 3 months. So it, within that bag, you could probably comfortably grow, if you wanted to, just one bag would maybe be enough to grow your peas up, because don't forget your peas, you could grow climbing peas. So you form a little teepee with some sticks, put in your pea plants, you could put three on either side of the teepee, and that would train upwards. Or within that same bag, you could probably grow, I would say, 4 spinach plants, you know, or 2 broccoli plants. So you could use bags of potting soil as they are, put in the little holes. Make sure you put some drainage holes on the other side, because you don't want them to become waterlogged. And you could grow vegetables very comfortably in that.
Another question coming through, garlic, is it too late, or could we still plant some of the garlic
You could, yes, you could plant some garlic. It is available within the garden centres at the moment in the bulb form, and it wouldn't be too late yet. As I say, I think come, you know, the end of June, it depends on how quickly we get freezing cold, the those plants, you know, you could still plant up until then. So just as soon as your temperature starts dropping to the zeros, that's when your planting would have to slow down, because then it would be very difficult for the plant to germinate. So it can grow happily in those conditions, but it just wouldn't be able to produce the roots and then the stems that follow in mine, you know, below zero temperatures.
You know, we've been talking about plants, but also the time of the year to look at our hard landscaping, so perhaps our walls and our pots and so forth, and it's the time for us to give us a lick of paint. What are the colors that people are looking at?
Actually, I was looking at some of the Tascon colors, and there seems to be a very mood, very trendy color is to actually be gray. So you either have that chocolate brown color, which is a nice rich color, but then it's to have a very subtle gray color that when you put your plants in it, especially if they're flowering plants or actually even foliage plants, they really show off the plant. So your pot isn't so much the feature anymore. It's giving the plant the opportunity to look its best. And so I also think that's quite a beautiful thing. So it's no longer the, you know, we went through a very big move of Tuscan colors.
That's right.
And mustard and very warm yellowy colors.
Mm-hmm.
And now the mood seems to be far more subtle colors that blend almost into the environment or become part of the environment, but complement the plant. And then the plant is the one that looks, that is the outstanding feature within the pot. So the pots also tend to be far more earthy, in earthy colors. So it wouldn't be a plain, like, white pot anymore. It would be a cream pot. Cream is not almost the right word. It's a slightly off-white pot.
Okay.
You know, so it's really just blending into the environment, very subtle colors at the moment.
Yeah, and finally the last question is that when we're looking at some of these, you know, trends, what do you think is going to happen? Is food still a very strong trend for 2016 going in towards the, you know, 2016-2017?
Sorry, I missed what was it?
Food security is still very high on the agenda, gardeners' agenda, 2016-2017.
Yeah, I think that's always going to be, you know, the vegetables and the edibles has become so popular, and so everything gets more and more expensive in the shop. The best way is to grow your own. So food security and actually the community food security. So if you have empty spaces within your communities, starting vegetable gardens, planting citrus trees on your pavement for others to be able to, you know, have a lemon and get some vitamin C that they might not be able to do. That's becoming a very trendy thing and very, I think, a way of sharing with others.
I must say to you, you know, that it hankers after World War II, where you found lots of that happened in the UK and so forth. But I think, I'm not too sure how that will, you know, sort of feature in the South African scenario. We'll talk about that the next time. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. We're going for... It's already 9:30. That's what I'm saying. Yes, it was gone. But we'll chat about it. I know I want to talk about it because it's such an important aspect and there's lots of empty spaces. But you take care, Carrie. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Are you at any particular center this morning? Are you going to be anywhere near any of the centers? No.
Actually, no. This morning I'm working in the background. I'm going to start looking for the Comfort Tree for that customer.
And I'm going to definitely bring you that leave. I don't know what it's called, but you're going to help me. Take care.
Yes, that would be great.
You look after yourself. Thanks, Carrie. Thanks,
Okay. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.